Hi there, this is Cassie.
And this is Rigel.
And we're with A Touch of Flavor. A Touch of Flavor helps build relationships outside the box.
All right, so as far as announcements, the announcement is kind of this. We've been, you know, talking to a few of you, asked what would be the best way to communicate with you, asked if people thought they would like a podcast, and we got a lot of really good feedback on Facebook and on our mailing list. So we're recording this. This is kind of a test podcast. We're not actually going to put it on a podcast. We'll put it, you know, on Facebook and maybe YouTube, put it out, see if people like it. And if they like it, you know, we'll go ahead with the podcast and actually maybe get like some music and all that fancy stuff that goes along with it.
All right. So the topic that we're covering today is group sex for dyads. So if you're in a dyad and you're considering group sex, or even if you've done it and you have some questions, hopefully we'll be able to help you out there. So why, you know, group sex, I guess, is like the first question, right? Like, why would you do group sex? Well, it's fun. You know, it's just like with having sex with anybody new. It adds some variety and is fun, exciting. You can also experiment a little bit as far as, you know, if there's things that, you know, your one partner is not into, you can maybe try some things that are not what they like, or, you know, that they're not really into with somebody else. So it adds variety, and variety, you know, is fun. So I think that's the biggest reason to do it.
Yeah, I know, like, a lot of people, like, the first question they ask us is like, why have group sex? Why, like, if you're in a dyad, why maybe like open that up and do something with more of two people? And I mean, we have it on the topic list to talk about, and like, I really wish we could go more into it, but really the answer is because it's fun. I mean, hopefully that's why you're doing pretty much anything with sex, is to have a good time.
I mean, of course there's like small, like, you know, I would like to say outside reasons, like, you know, like, I'm bisexual, and if I just have a male partner, I might be able to, you know, experiment and have stuff that I want to do with a female partner. Or, you know, if I'm more dominant and my partner is dominant and we get to, you know, play together and have sex with somebody, and they can play more of a submissive role. So, I mean, there's all those little aspects that, you know, is different for everybody. But I think the main key reason to have multiple partner sex is fun. Right? I mean, like, that should be the reason anyway.
I would hope so. And just an interesting thing, actually, on how this topic, I guess, came to be the topic of this show, episode, whatever we're calling it.
This test episode.
Yeah, but you're saying that now, if it becomes something later, I'm going to have to try and edit all this talk about testing out. But here's the thing. So here's what happened. So we were discussing, you know, what topic do we want to do for this? And we have kind of like a wide audience. You know, we've got a lot of people. We got everybody from, I mean, you know, obviously it's kinky and non-monogamous folks, but we've got everything from people who are, you know, looking to date. We do a lot of work with those people, to people who are in relationships, long-term relationships. And, you know, since the main point of putting this out is to see if people like this and how well we're able to help people with doing kind of a podcast, we wanted to find a topic that could kind of speak to everybody, hopefully. So we put out an email and a Facebook post, like, ask us your questions about group sex, which in retrospect is really probably way too general, like, ask about group sex.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So the questions that we got from people, and we got quite a few, and we'll go through later in this, but they really tended to center around, if I'm in a dyad, you know, talking about if I'm already in a dyad, I'm already in a relationship, how do I handle group sex in that situation? So I think the questions kind of chose the topic for us that we didn't narrow down enough at the beginning.
Yeah, a lot of the questions that we got were very dyad focused, and more so dealing with, okay, we're in a dyad and we want to do something with other people or another person. How do I deal with that? How do I negotiate? How do I deal with jealousy? So yeah, the topic was sort of picked because we picked a very broad topic. And so thank you guys for narrowing it down for us.
Yeah. So before we get to negotiating, which I think we're going to talk about in a second, as far as finishing up the whole, like, why, I actually had a question for you.
Okay.
You know, because we were saying mostly it's for fun, obviously. But what's your opinion on why people might want to do that rather than just kind of going out and finding separate partners and having sex with other people and spicing things up and having fun that way?
See, I think that's a good question. I think that the main reason is because you get to experience, you get to have like your cake and eat it too. Like, especially if you're somebody who's like, okay, I really enjoy this aspect of playing with this person and I really like this of this person. Well, now I get to have both people. So it's having like the best of both worlds. So, you know, it's having that ability to, have it all, really. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And also, you get to kind of experience different things with different people. So, for example, with me with group sex, I can be, you know, really rough with one partner and really soft with one partner and do that at the same time. So I don't have to be choosing between being a soft person or a hard person. I can be both. So I get to kind of experience different aspects of myself with each person within the same sexual experience, which is a lot of fun. So that's my answer personally. But I think for the most part, it's the having your cake and eating it too. You can have more than one thing at the same time.
Yeah. And I think that's a good reason. I think, you know, a lot of people, especially if they're like just opening a relationship up, I think they do it kind of for security, like with the idea that, like, you know, they'll be less jealous or less jealous, I guess, mainly that they'll be less jealous. And so I think a lot of people go into it with that thought. And I know we're going to talk a little about jealousy later, but I think that's probably the exact wrong
reason. Yes, it's the wrong. It's so wrong. I think a lot of people do go into it with that thought. And when you were saying that, I was like, oh gosh, yes. So that's why I didn't say it as a reason, is because although people do it and that is their reason, I got to tell you, like, if you're worried that you're going to be jealous when you start seeing that NRE cranking up with your partner balls deep in another partner, you are going to feel a lot more jealous than just the idea that your partner's off screwing somebody else. Like, so if that is your reason for doing multi-partner sex, don't do it. It's a horrible idea. And it'll blow up in your face. So don't do that.
Yeah. I think, you know, as somebody, I mean, I don't know if it's exactly the same thing, but, you know, like occasionally, very, very, very occasionally with very certain people, you will bottom. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I can count maybe on one hand the number of time in like 10 years, you know? And for me personally, it's actually easier. I've found a lot easier for me to not be there, you know, because I see you as my dom. And, you know, it's easier for me in my headspace to just not be there at all rather than being there. And I think there's, it's not exactly the same thing, but I think there's a lot of that same situation, you know, in the situation you're talking about.
Well, there's that. And, you know, so there's the aspect of jealousy and, you know, jealousy is really, really hard to face when it's thrown directly in your face. And then there's also the aspect of, you know, what you're talking about, which is something that, you know, if you're having group sex to avoid doing something with a partner that your partner is not okay with or doesn't like, your partner being there, it's probably not going to make them like it anymore. If your partner doesn't like seeing you like in a submissive role or in a dominant role or having anal sex or whatever, and your partner doesn't like to see that, them seeing somebody else do it with you is not going to make it better either. So the group sex aspect isn't necessarily going to replace the things that you don't want to be involved in. You don't want to be jealous. You don't want to see certain things. So doing group sex that way is not going to make it any better.
So I think to kind of sum that up, fun, good reason to do it. Spice things up, good reason to do it. Thinking it's going to somehow make you feel more secure and less jealous, really horrible reason.
Yes.
Okay, so and we're going to try and leave a pretty decent amount of time at the end to do question and answer. So, but I think, you know, after the why, I think a lot of the questions that we get in some way or another tend to fall around negotiating both, you know, with, since we're talking about dyads, because that's how most of the questions came in and people kind of chose that topic, mm-hmm. You know, both between the dyad, the people in the dyad, especially if they aren't experienced with it, and then with whoever, however many people or whoever many people they're bringing in into the situation, you know, for like group sex.
Yeah.
So I guess what do you think are like kind of the key steps to negotiating? Like if you could like give like a few minute little tutorial for people.
Okay, so I would suggest, and bringing a little bit away from like what the actual negotiation is, but if you are a dyad and you've never had group sex before, discuss it amongst yourselves before like bringing a third party into your home or deciding that you're going to go to some event and hop into an orgy, you guys should definitely have a discussion first. Because, you know, when you're negotiating, sometimes things can come up. And the last thing you want is for you and your partner to be arguing in front of another person or a group of people because you aren't on the same page. Because sometimes, you know, when you're negotiating, some feelings get brought up and sometimes we can get a little, especially if our partner brings something on us that we were not seeing coming, right? Like if we didn't know that it was going to happen or they were going to ask for this thing, we can sometimes find ourselves tensed, right? And not particularly in a very good mode to keep our cool. And, you know, it's one thing to kind of keep your cool with your partner who's known you for a long time and understands that, you know, the little bit of attitude you might have during this negotiation, you know, try not to have it. But that if you have it, that's not who you are all the time. Bring that in front of a group of people that, you know, say, for instance, you haven't met or someone that you've just messed around with a little bit. That can be, you know, it makes it not sexy. It makes the whole group sex thing not sexy. So, I would recommend talking to your partner first. And I would also recommend, if possible, to negotiate the group sex thing before you're trying to have group sex. There is nothing more unsexy than being like, okay, guys, let's sit down and try to negotiate this out 10 minutes before we're trying to fuck. Like it doesn't go well. It completely shifts the mood. From, you know, let's get down and dirty to like, okay, let's get serious and talk about, you know, all of our things, which can be unsexy sometimes, you know?
Well, and like when we're doing with people like sex or play, like unless it's somebody like, you know, a longer term partner, who we, you know, had the discussions with before and, you know, we already know their limits and we know what they're looking for and that kind of thing, you know, and then we'll just go up to somebody and be like, hey, you know, like, has anything changed? You know, yeah. Is there anything different today? But, you know, short of that situation, we usually negotiate with people like not even that day.
That's
like
what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. In advance, like either sit down or on the phone, but like well in advance of what we're actually going to do so that when we meet up, like we can be like, okay, everything's still good and do it. You know?
Like it's good to have like a little like debriefing, like, you know, sometimes somebody's got a headache or a sprained ankle or someone's on their period or whatever. And it's good to like get that little bit of an update. But like going through like all of your stuff, you know, that's not a sexy conversation. And so talking about the non-sexy conversation, which is negotiations, you know, you can try to make negotiations as sexy as possible. But in reality, what we're trying to look at is, you know, what someone's hard limits are, what their soft limits are. And even if you're not planning on having sex, and this is more focused around sex, but I'm going to say this, even if you're not planning on actually having sex and just playing, it's good to define what sex is, especially when we're talking about group sex. What is sex and what types of sex are okay? Because like me, I think oral sex is foreplay. Like, and I think that it's making out. Like I define that under making out. That most people don't. But that's my definition. So, you know, if I'm negotiating with somebody, we, you know, I make sure that I'm spelling out each individual thing that I'm okay with. So you want to go over those hard limits, soft limits, and talk about sex kind of separately. Like, what is sex to you? And what particular sex activities are okay. Also, you might want to still bring up things like triggers, even if this is not a, BDSM style scene, it's still a good idea to find out if your partner has any types of triggers. And, you know, so that way you can try to avoid those things. And I also recommend injuries. And it's good idea, you know, even for sex, just so that way you know if someone has something going on. But the main things is the things that are their hard limits, absolutely no circumstances aren't going to do it. Their soft limits as far as, you know, screwing around, things like that. Are things that they'll only do under certain circumstances and find out what those circumstances are. And then definitely have a deep conversation about sex and what it is and what activities are okay. Because sex can mean a lot of things to a lot of people.
I think the stuff that you're just talking about is really more like once you're meeting with the person, like the things you're going to discuss with them, like hard limits, soft limits, you know, what is sex, things along those lines. But I think, you know, especially talking about new people who haven't done it before, like a dyad who hasn't done something like this before, I think equally important is what they should be discussing beforehand.
So that's the conversation for the, you know, for after they're talking. So I kind of skipped ahead. So I think for, you know, for a partnership that is, you know, two people before they're actually talking to somebody else. The big thing is when negotiating is finding out if you're actually okay with it to begin with. Like, you know, sometimes we talk about things as far as our fantasies, like, oh, it'd be absolutely awesome to do X, Y, and Z. But when we actually get down to doing it, our partners are not actually okay. So, you know, I think the first thing is actually finding out if your partner is okay, especially if you've been monogamous and you haven't done any sort of outside sex partners or anything like that, is finding out if this is actually something that both of you are on the same page with. And then if you are on the same page, what you guys are actually okay doing. Like, for instance, you know, are you okay with the idea of, you know, your partner having sex unprotected with somebody else? Is there certain sex acts that, you know, you're not particularly okay doing without protection, or, you know, are okay only with protection, things like that, that you guys are okay with as far as your relationship first? Because, you know, you want to have those conversations before you're talking to someone else. Because when they asked you, you want to be able to know whether or not what you're answering is actually what your partner's okay with. Like, you might be like, this sounds really awesome. And then your partner's like, no, that's not okay with me. So having that conversation up front, I think, is really important.
I think that having that conversation up front really, I think that's mainly the things that you do need to discuss up front. Like, A, is people really okay with it? And B, what are they okay with?
Yeah.
So what, like, let's talk for a minute about like common hurdles, like that people run into. And I think we decided to talk about a few that aren't questions people asked us for the Q&A. So the common hurdle, I think the first one that we see a lot of, like, get a lot of questions around, like, just most of the time, is like getting a partner to agree in the first place. And I think to a certain extent, that's kind of not a good question. Like, how do I get my partner to agree? You know, because at the end of the day, I don't think it's about getting them to agree. Like, you aren't looking to talk them into something they don't want to do. Like, what you should be looking to do is find out if it's something they'd like to do.
Yeah, I think it's to be finding out if it's something that they want to do. And if it's something they want to do, but there's a but, figuring out what that but is. Because a lot of times what I find with a lot of people with, you know, sex and kink, a lot of times it's I would be interested in doing X, but I'm worried about this, or but I'm not comfortable with that. I mean, sometimes now there's flat out, no, I'm not interested whatsoever. But a lot of times it's a but, right? Like, I would be willing to have multi-partner sex, but I'm worried about this. I'm worried about jealousy. I'm worried about, you know, STDs, whatever. I think it's finding out if it's something they're actually interested in, and if there is that but, if you actually have sort of a remedy to that but that would encourage them, not trying to force them, but if there's a but there that's a legitimate but, and you actually have some sort of solution to that but to try to address that.
Like what?
Like, okay, so I'm worried that you're going to be jealous that someone else can give me more orgasms, right? So that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that my husband is going to get jealous of me having sex with somebody else, and I'm going to have to deal with his jealousy. You know, my partner could say, well, you know, I'm not going to necessarily be jealous. You know, there are certain things that you can do to help me not be jealous. These are the types of things that I would need to feel, you know, sort of like the aftercare after the sex, you know, like, I really need some time for us to connect after we have group sex or something like that. And that would make me not be as jealous. So, you know, I'm just giving examples, but there's different things that people can do to, you know, remedy those certain problems. Or I'm worried about STDs, and it's like, okay, well, I will promise you that I will use protection during doing X, Y, and Z.
I think that's good. And I think, so as far as, but, you know, so I think that's good. And so kind of what we're saying is, you know, I don't think it's so much about getting your partner to agree as discussing it with your partner and finding out if it's something they want or they'd like to do, or, you know, or that they'd be interested in. And, you know, so I think the question really should be not like, how do I get my partner to agree with me? Mm-hmm. But the question should more be, how do I talk to my partner about having group sex if it's something I'm interested in? You know, preferably depending on I think the dyad, like, without pissing them off, right? So I always think that you know, we have this discussion for a lot of things, but I always think a great way to do that, like if you've, I mean, obviously the best way is if you're at that point with your partner just being like, hey, like, I think it would be cool to have a threesome. I think it would be cool to do this. I think it would be cool to do that. What do you think? Like, that's the ideal. Like, that's a place, like, it would be great if you could get to with your partner.
But not everybody is.
Right, and not everybody's there. So I think the next best way to kind of, like, float that idea, and we talk about this for a lot of different things, like when people are, like, first maybe trying to bring kink into a relationship or something like that, is to try and bring it up, like, while you're goofing around as dirty talk, because you always have that option of if it floats and, you know, you're bringing it up during dirty talk and you're like, oh, you know, I think it'd be so hot to see you like X, Y, and Z or something along those lines. And they kind of go with it. Then you can always bring it up again later afterwards and see if they were serious to kind of push the issue a little more and maybe open that discussion. But if you do it and they're like,
yeah,
and they, you know, they clearly don't like it, you can play it off as just something that you said, you know.
Try to be dirty.
Yeah, to be dirty. I mean, any other tips you think, like, for talking, like, trying to get, talking to a partner about being interested in doing something?
I mean, you know, if you have a relationship where this is really, really outside of anything that you've done, I recommend, you know, if the dirty talk thing doesn't work, you know, just having a very open conversation, but also starting with maybe asking what they would like to do. Like, you might find out that your partner has been craving the same thing you have for a long time that you didn't know they were. So, like, you know, if you can bring up a conversation and be like, hey, is there anything that you would like to try sexually? And I found that when I do that with partners, I find out all kinds of fun stuff that I never knew that they wanted to do that I can use now later. you know, just bring up, you know, questions about what they would like to do. And then normally that also opens them up to asking you what you might be interested in. And it's more of a fun conversation about sex in general rather than, hey, babe, you know, I really would like to have a threesome, which, you know, works for people who are in that position to do so, but isn't necessarily something that someone who's never done anything can really, you know, walk up to their partner and say right off the bat. It would be nice if they could, but not necessarily.
So what do you think about, like, because I see, and it's not a question we got, but with talking with this, like, about how to discuss it with your partner. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to wrap my brain around this sometimes because it's just been like, I'm not in a position where I have to do this, but I feel like, you know, like there would be a thought of, okay, well, if I bring this up to my partner, they're going to feel like they're not enough for me or I'm unsatisfied in the relationship or they're not pleasing me sexually. What do you think about that?
I think that it depends on how you bring it up. If you're bringing something up and you're like, this is something I have to have and I really, really, really want this and you're harping on it, then yeah, you're going to make your partner feel a little off about it, right? If they feel like the big piece of your life that's missing is...
See, first episode bloopers. Yeah,
you told me to silence my phone. You didn't silence yours.
Nope.
If you make them feel as though what you're asking is a ultimatum or is a demand, then a lot of times, yes, that's gonna impact the relationship. But that's why I was saying, as far as bringing up that conversation about, hey, baby, like, is there anything you'd like to try in the bedroom? Oh, this is something I'd like to try in the bedroom. And you're bringing it up as things that you would like to try versus something that you have to have or something that you've been craving forever. If you bring it up as just a, like, this sounds fun, what do you think? It brings a lot less pressure onto the other partner. So I think I think there's definitely a true aspect to people feeling like they're not enough. That does happen. But I think a lot of it comes to being how the person presents it. If you're presenting it as something that's an idea or something that you just want to try, there's a lot less of that feeling like it's on you as a partner, as far as what your partner wants is, and, you know, and more as far as it being just something fun to do.
Okay. And I think also part of that is, you know, like a lot of things, like, if you're already having relationship problems or like sex, like, you know, like sexual incompatibility or like sexual like problems and you're working on that stuff, hopefully you're working on that stuff.
Yeah.
That's a really bad time to bring it up.
Absolutely. It's a horrible time to bring up, hey, you know, I'd really like to have sex with this other person while me and you haven't been having sex for 6 months. You want to make sure that, you know, you kind of have your ducks in a row at home before bringing more cocks, I guess. You know, like, you want to make sure that you have everything between you and your partner straightened out, definitely.
Okay. I think one of the other common like things people say is, well, you know, this is something I'm interested in doing. I talk to my partner. It's something they're interested in doing. We already kind of covered the negotiation thing, but how do I actually find somebody? And I think this is really kind of dependent on where you're at. And by that, I mean both like, you know, geographically where you're at, but also like how involved are you in the alternative communities where you're at?
Yeah, it's a location and also like you as a person where you are at. First of all, if you have a local community, that is a good place to find people who are willing to do stuff. You know, where we're located at, I could, you know, we're in the Baltimore, Maryland area. I can go to any given dungeon space, house party, whatever, and I can find people who are interested in group sex or other activities, whatever, and I wouldn't have a hard time doing it. Now, if you are in another area, like, you know, say Kansas in the middle of nowhere, and you have a population of like 50 people, you might have a harder time actually physically finding people. And you might have to like go to your big city or find somewhere, you know, that's not necessarily in your close proximity to where you live. That being said, you know, you can find people online. There's communities, you know, as far as not to go find have sex with, but to be able to find, you know, communities and people and places to go. There is places to kind of connect online. So even if you're in like a little tiny city, you might be able to find people that are branching a little further out from that are involved in the same things that you are involved in and would be willing to travel to do things. So it might take, especially if you're in the middle of nowhere, getting in your car and going somewhere. But also as far as, you know, where you're at, it's more difficult to find partners to do things with when nobody knows who you are. Like if you're just starting to get into your community, just starting to meet people, it's a little bit more harder because nobody knows who you are. It's not like, oh yeah, my friend Bob, he really likes to do this. Here you go. And that's how a lot of connections are made. So, if you're at a particular point in your life where you're just kind of discovering things and you haven't really met a lot of people, I'd say get out, go do stuff, go to some classes, go to a couple parties, that sort of thing, and get out and have, you know, connections with people. So that way they know who you are.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think that the using the internet to find groups to go out to is a really good thing if you're looking to like meet somebody for group sex. Cause here's the thing, like, first off, I think that getting out, like finding groups in your community, if you're kinky, if you're not monogamous, is always really going to be the best way to find partners. But, you know, a lot of times if you do live in a really remote area, online dating is a really viable option, you know, especially if you're in an area without a big community and those kinds of things. But, and I will say but here, I think that it's a lot less successful for finding people for group sex. Like, I get so many horror stories from women who are on like OkCupid, which OkCupid is really a, if you're looking online to find a kinky partner, OkCupid is a really great site for a lot of reasons that we go into in a lot of other things. Yeah. But I can't tell you how many like stories I get from the women on there, including you,
yeah,
who no matter what they put in their profile, just get hammered by couples looking to hook up.
Oh, yeah. And that's why I said going online is a good way to find people to get to know. Not to find, don't take that the wrong way, not find people to have group sex with. But it's a good way to find other like-minded folks who might be into the same things you are. Especially things like FetLife, where, you know, it has groups and, you know, different things that are going on. And it might not necessarily be in your hometown, but like, you know, hey, there's this thing that's, you know, on a weekend one day and yeah, it's going to be a 4-hour drive to get there, but there's going to be all these people that I'm going to be able to meet and all these activities going on. And some actually have like group sex, like, you know, events and things like that, that you can go and learn about group sex and learn about how to negotiate these things and meet people who are interested in that sort of stuff. So
You mean like organized orgies? Like specifically? Because I mean a lot of kink stuff, like there will be group sex there, but they're not like
There's a lot of like, you know, especially larger events, right? Like your camp events and stuff like that. We'll have like, okay, whatever orgy. And even if you don't want to participate in the orgy, but you want to learn a little bit more about orgies and how to negotiate them and how to work, you know, with people that you aren't necessarily, you know, that aware of who they are and things like that, how to have like those, you know, meetup kind of group orgy kind of things. You can learn a lot by just going to the beginning. Like they do a lot of like lesson planning in the beginning before the actual orgy. So, getting out and just meeting people who are, you know, interested in the same things and do the same things. So you can learn from them, right? Like the easiest thing to do is learn from other people who are doing it.
Okay. Other common hurdle, jealousy. Jealousy and feeling left out. I think there's, and I would define the difference between the two, I think to me, as more the feeling left out is what happens during, and then the jealousy is what happens afterwards. If I had to kind of divide the two up.
I think you can feel jealousy during, but I think that jealousy often comes from like during group sex, if you're having a good time.
You're not that worried about being jealous.
You're not worried about being jealous, right? Like if I am getting fulfilled and I'm having a blast, like I'm not worried about what's going on with my partner, right? Like it feels good. I'm having a good time. Woohoo. When you start to feel jealousy during group sex, it's when you tend to feel like you're not getting yours, whether it's your emotional attention, your physical attention, whatever. It is when you feel like you're, you know, you said left out. You feel like you're not getting your piece, whatever that piece is. And a lot of times that stems from feeling like your partner's spending too much time with somebody else, or you're not necessarily getting the things that you need out of the group activity.
Well, I think a lot of that comes from kind of having realistic expectations going in. So as somebody who's had group sex more than a few times, you know, I think a lot of that comes down to expectations. So since we're talking a lot about dyads here, here's the thing. Like if you are going in and this is, you know, you and your partner and you're finding a third person to bring in. And, you know, we like, I the phrase people like to use is guest star, right? The third person is going to be the guest star of the night. Yeah. Chances are that the sex is going to be very unbalanced. Probably the vast majority, if this is the first time or maybe like the second time, or, you know, there's big gaps in between when this happens, chances are that person is going to be getting pretty much all the attention from everybody. But chances are also that you're probably not going to care, assuming there's like some kind of sexual attraction between everybody involved, because everybody's going to be in that kind of like, oh, this is hot, this is new, this is sparkly thing, right? Mm-hmm. So chances are you're not going to care. Now, as stuff continues to go, saying you're doing the same thing, I'd say I think it really comes down to more like if you're doing stuff with the same person regularly enough, right, to where there becomes, it's not just necessarily like new and sparkly anymore. Then I think as far as expectations, it's kind of important to realize that when you're talking about group sex as opposed to like dyad sex, there's definitely kind of like a flow of attention. Like when you're having dyad sex, it's really like you and this person, there's this connection. You guys are kind of focusing on each other. There's a lot of stuff you can do to each other at the same time. But I feel like group sex, like once you get past that guest star phase, especially if it's successful group sex, mm-hmm. it tends to be more like, it kind of flows like, it's a lot more of like two people focusing on one person. And obviously there's spats of people doing this and people doing that. Yeah. But just mechanically and emotionally and the way things work out, it tends to be like these two people focus on this person and now these two people will focus on this person.
And I think that's very threesome focused.
And that's probably true.
I think that's a very threesome perspective. And a lot of Josh's group sex has been, you know, has been threesome sex. So,
and that is very true.
So, you know, I think that's a very threesome sex perspective. I think with, say, when you start adding four people, five people, it starts to be a little bit different than that. A lot of times two people pair off. And occasionally you have like the one person and everybody is like, you know, vampire mauling them. Yeah. But a lot of times people tend to pair off into groups. But going back to that sort of circular kind of screwing around where each person is getting some kind of activity, whether it's two people, you know, or I should say three people, two people, it's kind of easy because it's just, you know, you and that other person. It should be going that way, by the way. If you're in a monogamous relationship and it's just the two of you fucking, both of you should be getting attention sometimes. But as far as like with three people, four people, five people, whatever, it should be sort of a rotation of who is getting attention. And you're talking about the guest star. I think that term is very funny. But the big thing to keep in mind with, you know, keeping kind of jealousy at bay is when that guest star becomes a co-host or a special guest who shows up all the time, they are no longer a guest star. So they need to start getting less and
less. Need to give some to get some.
Yeah, it needs to be a little bit less and less of that guest star interaction. And even in the beginning, you know, with the understanding that expectation of the guest star is going to get more, you know, attention. As somebody who has gone through NRE, has messed around with newer people, and it's really, really exciting, just keep in the back of your head that your partner is a person too, to just try your best to keep making sure that you are doing some sort of interacting with your partner. It doesn't have to be necessarily a lot, but I've seen situations that have blown up where, you know, you have the guest star and you have the two partners and they're both really, really into the guest star. And then afterwards they feel like there was something wrong between the two of them, and they blow up at each other, that sort of thing, because they felt like their partner didn't pay any attention to them. So just trying to keep in intact with that you are still partners, you know, do a couple interactions with your partner at least. But the big thing is just, you know, if the guest star turns into a co-host or a frequent guest, to, you know, move away from just it being a focus on that person.
Well, and I think I'll say one more thing before we move on, like talking about afterwards, but the during, which is, I think something to look out for, and this is more like, you know, a lot of things are partner selection. This is more like a planning issue, I think.
Yeah.
Is, I think you're more likely, say it's a situation, it is a new person. Like you said, like if everybody's having fun, like, and this isn't like a routine, you're probably not going to be too worried when it's happening. Where I think that does fall apart sometimes is when you have, there's like a sexual incompatibility. And the easiest way for me to say that is an example. So say like, it's me and it's you and we go to mess around with another girl, but she's not really into girls. She's really only into guys. Well, she's new, so we're both going to be really focused on her, but she's not really interested in you. So really it's going to be me focused on her and her focused on me. So I think that is kind of something to keep in mind is, you know, what's the sexual compatibility between the people that you're bringing in? I'm not saying that it has to all be there. It
no,
doesn't.
Absolutely.
But I think that it's good to keep that in mind because that can wind up making somebody feel left out or jealous.
Yeah. And I think like, as you said, it's kind of the pre-planning. Like, for example, if you're going into a situation, I had a friend just recently who had a, you know, female and male threesome sort of thing. And she was...
Like two females, one male or...
Two males, one female.
Okay.
And the males are straight. And you know, like they went into it with the idea of they're not doing anything with each other. They were just doing stuff to her and she was going to be doing stuff to them. And it was cool. They were fine with that. You know, like they were okay with that. I think it's when you go into it with an expectation of something else, like the person's like, yeah, I am bisexual. And really they're not bisexual. They're just trying to sleep with somebody or whatever, or they're, what is that called? Like the, when it's like, they're like a by trying or whatever,
a trisexual.
Yeah, there you go. It might be a little bit different. So, you know, it's really making sure up front that there's the expectation of what that person is going to be interacting with both partners, how they're going to do it. I think there's a lot of times that people are perfectly fine with the idea of not necessarily interacting with the other partner. But if you're going into it with the idea that everybody's going to be interacting with each other, that's going to be a really hard thing to deal with if it's not.
And I think that also if you do that and you do go into it with that agreement and you get into it and now you're getting rubbed the wrong way, I think that, you know, there needs to be a little like self-ownership there of, well, I'm not liking this, but I did agree to it. Yeah. I knew what I signed up for. So let's talk a little bit about, okay, you get done with it. Now we're talking about like jealousy after the fact. So I'm actually going to start on this.
Okay.
And the reason I'm going to start on this is because I have a personal story. So I think there's kind of two factors. See, after okay. The one is me like my own security, like how I feel afterwards about myself, right? And, you know, the feelings that I'm getting and needing to deal with my own emotions around it and kind of, you know, compare how I'm feeling to how things really are and maybe to do some self-comfort. And I think that's definitely one factor. And I think the other factor, though, can be partner cost. So I think a big thing to that, and I think this is especially something to look out for if you're maybe just having group sex, like you're not used to it. Like this is maybe your first time. You've been like monogamous with this person for a while. This is the first time bringing somebody new and sparkly in and doing something. So the first time Cassie and I had a threesome is now a good bit of time ago.
Like 12 years ago now.
Right. We all had a lot of fun. But it's easy if you're in that situation, that's not something you've been doing, to get kind of a little smitten. And I don't necessarily mean relationship smitten. I mean just kind of like, wow, I'm going to talk about how great this person was in bed afterwards for the next 2 days and those kinds of
things.
And
then your partner wants to kill you.
Right. So, you know, just something to look out for, I would say, afterwards is, you know, especially if you've gotten a partner. Now, you actually talked me into it, but, you know, especially maybe this is something that, you know, they didn't know how interested they were and they agreed to do it with you, but even not, that's not really the point. You know, make sure afterwards, especially if this is something that you've done a lot before, you should be talking a lot more about your partner and how great they were.
Even if it's, hey, you are great at giving the other person orgasms, you know, but going a long period of time talking about another person, especially like, you know, when we're in a relationship for a long period of time, we don't necessarily brag to our partner about sex anymore. We don't. Like, even if it's freaking awesome sex, it's like, oh, that was great. Okay, let's get to the store and go shopping. We don't daunt over our great sexual experiences with a partner that we've been with for a long time because we grow accustomed to it, right? Like, we're typically, you know, pretty happy with just kind of being like, that was good, or having our orgasms and going on our way, right? Like, you don't say to your partner every day, like, thank you so much, that was the best orgasm I've ever had. So when you have these new experiences and you have a good experience with somebody else, being like, this was so amazing, this was awesome, you know, it tends to look like the other person is better than you, right? It makes you feel like the other person is so much better because you don't hear those things. So just keep that in mind because it'll make your partner want to eat you after a while.
And, you know, as far as jealousy, you know, that's not caused by parts, not anything your partner did, you know, security with you. You know, I think it's important to realize, I think kind of the biggest thing that you have to conquer when you're talking about opening up a relationship, having sex with somebody out of your dyad, is everybody's like, you know, well, what if this person's... And the thing is, I think the key to opening up any relationship is to realize that there will always be something better than you at everything. And that includes sex. And, you know, the fact of the matter is your partner is not with you because you're the best in the world at sex. Part of the reason they may be with you is because you're good at sex, but they're not with you because you're the best in the world at sex. And they're not going to leave you over having a fun time with this partner. And if they do, that's probably not somebody you really wanted to be with anyways. And as you do it, and as you, you know, you do it a couple times, and, you know, the big breakthrough for me was realizing, like, this doesn't have to affect my relationship. It's sex. Like, my partner still loves me. Like, yes, she likes vagina. She likes girls. Like, she wants to sleep with women. But that doesn't have anything to do with our relationship. It's not a reflection on me. It's not going to affect whether she wants to stay with me or anything along.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I find that when we do classes, and now obviously I'm finding with our first little test episode here for a podcast, one of the most challenging things to get right is the timing. So we've actually been going for 45 minutes, I think way longer than we were trying, yeah, considering that we still have questions.
Yeah.
So I'm going to challenge us to answer these questions quickly.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna try. I will start, and then we can kind of all. So we're gonna do question and answer. Now, we had people send in some questions. Now, typically, what we'd like to do is actually like read people's names out on the air, but we realized after we did this that, you know, learning curves and growing pains, we didn't tell people we were going to read their name. So we're not going to, but we are going to say initials just so people know who we're talking to if you're listening.
And that, you know, we're answering your question.
Right. So the first question is, how do you navigate group sex with partners who are not bisexual? And this is from LJ. So I think that I think we've kind of talked about this a little bit already, but I think that the biggest thing is to recognize that ahead of time, to discuss it ahead of time, and to realize the imbalances that that might cause. Like, so I think that's really things that you need to discuss with your partner and with everybody involved ahead of time. Like, look, make it very clear who's attracted to who, who's willing to do what with who. Make sure everybody's okay with that and be aware that may tweak you a little bit while you're doing it.
Yeah. I think that's basically it. I don't really have a whole lot more to add to that. So,
lightning round question. Huh? I said they're now lightning round.
Lightning round. Okay. So, how do I deal with having sex with fluid bonded partners and non-fluid bonded partners? SB. So that's a little tricky. First of all,
I'm going to interrupt you for a second here. I think you need to tell people what is fluid bonded and what's not in case they don't know.
Okay. So if you don't know what fluid bonded is, that's when you don't use protection to keep you from, you know, certain fluids like semen, blood, things like that. And usually when people are talking about it, they're talking about sexual fluids. Some people might be talking about actual blood, like for blood play and stuff like that.
Yeah. And usually it's like, so basically you would be having sex without barriers.
Yeah.
It varies between people. If people are talking about fluid bonding, you may want to know if some people would include oral without barriers in that and some people would not.
Yes, there's a variation. And that's why I said in the beginning, you want to really talk about sex in detail. So having sex with a partner who is not fluid bonded with you while you're with your partner who is fluid bonded, there's some trickiness there. I, first of all, recommend, you know, if you are doing things with hands, you know, assigning a hand to each partner because you're not necessarily worried about what fluids are going to go on with your partner. You have to be less aware of your partner than you do the partner who is that you're not fluid bonded. I have heard people say in the past, this isn't necessarily my policy, that it's just easier to use barriers around the board. It's a lot easier not to forget who you are and are not using things with. So that is an option, not necessarily what I do all the time, but it does, you know, keeps down the opportunity of oopses with things. A good way to also sort of kind of keep the fluid bonded versus non-fluid bonded is to kind of split up your activities. If you're going to be doing something with your partner who you're fluid bonded with, it's better to keep those certain activities that are going to be fluid bonded activities to one person, then kind of switching it up. And you look like I'm confusing.
Yeah.
So for instance, if you are doing stuff like with your partner who you're fluid bonded with, and say you're going down on them and you're having sex with them, it's better to do those activities and then trade off to the other partner than to be like, okay, I'm going to do a blowjob here.
Intentionally kind of go in a circle.
Intentionally go in that circle thing. Because, now I just slipped a penis in my mouth that was not supposed to go in my mouth, but was supposed to go in my vagina, you know, like those sort of things, you know, get all switched up.
I would hope it would be the other way. Like I put one in my vagina, it's only supposed to go in my mouth.
No, I'm saying as a girl who maybe have like, you know, girl protection, like a, you know, a girl condom, but you know, that sort of thing. It keeps it from getting meshed up if you go in that natural circle of focusing on, okay, fluid partner, non-fluent partner. So that way you don't get them mixed up.
I will say Cassie has kind of a supernatural ability to keep track of the stuff that most of us don't have. So I'll just add three things to that real quick. A, it may very well be easier just to use barriers with everybody. I know she said that. B, if you're not going to use barriers with everybody, you know, the easier thing to do, even say like you're good with fingering the non-fluid bonded partner and you're not worried about, you don't have any cuts on your hands and you're not worried about using your hand without a glove. Even if that's the case, you may want to use a glove just to help you remember which hand is for who. It's a lot easier, just as a reference tool, it's a lot easier to remember what you were doing with what hand. We're not all as good as you. It's a lot easier to remember what to do with what hand when you have a glove. Last part of this, I'm speaking from personal experience here. If you're having sex with a partner you are not fluid bonded with, say you're fingering them, using a glove, not using a glove, it doesn't matter. Same thing can go with toys. Do not put your hand that you're using to finger somebody anywhere that you might put your mouth later. Cassie's rule, which is now my new rule, is if I'm with somebody I'm not fluid bonded with, I'm not going to put my hand anywhere above their neck and I'm not going to put my mouth anywhere below it. So just something to keep in mind. How prevalent are STDs among those who have group sex? The concept is exciting, but the possible consequences are not so much. This is by PJ. I think you would actually be surprised. So first and foremost, obviously in a perfect world, monogamous people, monogamous isn't even the word, a closed group, right? Because it doesn't even have to necessarily be two people. A closed group, nobody's doing anything with anybody outside of the group, is the absolute safest thing for STDs. Reality of that tends to be people aren't as monogamous as they say they are. They do stuff outside of the group or the couple. Really, we're mostly talking about couples here. And, you know, somebody's doing something outside of the group, and because they're not supposed to be doing it, there's no discussion and there's no safety measures put in place. And people, not only do they not know their risk levels, but people aren't taking the precautions they need to. So what I have found with this, and I think what research has generally shown, is that in a lot of ways, you're a lot safer having sex among people who are open to A, discussing exactly who they're having sex with, B, who are very aware of, you know, safety factors and protection and those kinds of things and risk factors, and C, who can actually have an honest conversation about what protection they're using with what people and lay those boundaries out. So, you know, I think that for the most part, assuming everybody's being honest, which is what you're assuming in a group dynamic, or in a monogamous dynamic, I think that group sex is as safe as you make it. I mean, what kind of discussions you can have with people about who else they're sleeping with and what precautions they're taking? What kind of testing are you going to get done? What kind of protection are you going to use? So I think that really that's up to the guidelines that you're going to lay out and how you're going to implement. Prevalence of STDs is not nearly as high as you probably believe, because most of the people in, say, the kink community, non-monogamous community, are very aware. They're getting tested regularly. They have protection, and they're all talking about
it. Yeah, it's that open conversation keeps it so that way people are getting tested and are taking care of things, rather than I'm not doing anything outside of my relationship and suddenly someone comes home with, you know, something. So yeah, it's definitely in the kink and sex positive communities are a lot better with that. So next question. Hi, I've had group sex. It's great fun, but only with strangers. Friends don't work out so well for us. Why? My response to this, I hate answering questions with questions. But part of that is why to you, is there a problem? For one, you know, when we're having group sex situations, it's not about whether this person is a friend or a stranger, it's whether or not we can handle our interactions with this person after we have sex with them. So it might be easier for you to have sex with strangers because you don't have to see them. You don't have to face that reality that you've had group sex with them. That being said, the issues that you're having with friends, it might be that you're picking the wrong friends to sleep with. They're not necessarily people who are self-aware, or maybe you're not as self-aware as you think you are. And when you have sex with your friends, it causes issues there. There's lots of people who are able to have casual sex with their like friends and things like that. We do. and it's great. I love having friends that I can sleep with, but also still just hang out and do a girls' paint night with. But it really comes down to that interaction. Are you picking people who are not, you know, able to have, you know, just sex and not have like drama afterwards? Or in fact, are you the person who is having the drama afterwards? A lot of times when we see a consistency, it's not usually the other people, it's ourselves. So, you know, you might want to reflect on what you're doing, why your friendships are not working after you're having sex with your friends. And if it's because there's big giant things of jealousy or the way that you're treating your friends afterwards, you might want to reflect on that. And if having just sex with strangers is the way that you can do it, then maybe you should just stick with that.
And that question was from H. So next question, I'm going to try and get through this without laughing. What if you get going and you see a penis and you're like, nope, that doesn't fit in there?
That's from AK.
This is from AK. So, okay. I feel like I'm lacking a little context for this question. But what I'm going to assume and answer is that this question is, you know, essentially like you have set up, and I can only see this happening under very specific circumstances. So what I have in my mind here is like you set up a group sex encounter You've never seen this person naked before. You already have in your mind, like, what you're supposed to be doing. Like, okay, I'm a chick. My husband and I, and I don't think this really is specific to group sex, to be honest with you. But, my husband and I, my partner and I, we're going to hook up with this guy, and we're going to have this, this, and this kind of sex. And during this, you know, we're going to have penis and vagina sex with this guy. And then he's going to take off his pants, and it's going to be enormous, and it's not going to fit. So I'm going to give you a couple answers. First off, I don't care what hole you're talking about. It will fit with enough effort. That's probably not a very good answer.
No, that's not a good answer.
Honestly,
for the most part, things will fit eventually. With effort and lube. Effort and lube. Lube being the key thing.
And time.
Most things will fit. But just for... particularly anal. I will say that there are some people that, you know, certain size penises will not do anal. Vaginas, not so much. Mouths, you're BSing. You're BSing. You can fit things in your mouth. If you can bite into a burger, you can fit a penis in there.
Right.
But as far as anal sex, yeah, there are sometimes a size thing. My thing is if the penis doesn't go there, find somewhere else to put it. Like, you have three holes in your body.
And you have hands.
I really think that's kind of the answer to the question is, if, you know, and taking it outside of the penis size or outside of that, if you're in a sex situation, and this is group sex or non-group sex, but particularly with group sex, because we go into group sex with all these like fantasies and ideas of what we're going to do, right? We're like, okay, we're going to do this, this, this. And then we throw that other person in the mix and we're like, this is not going to work. Have the idea of, although you're going into things with some ideas and that and these fantasies that you really want to do, be flexible, be willing to change what you're doing. Cause sometimes things ain't going to go in the bum, you know, like there's situations that stuff is not going to go in the butt, or, you know, somebody is going to not feel like doing this or that for whatever reason. So be flexible, be willing to kind of change things up a little bit. And that's why it's a good idea when you're talking about these fantasies to have more than just one thing you're planning to do. Cause a lot of people do that. Like I'm going to have a threesome and this is the activity that we're going to do. And if that activity doesn't happen, it falls apart. So being willing to be, you know, willing to change things up. But as far as if the penis doesn't fit in there, stick it in there or there or there or rub on it.
Yeah. And I would say, and I mean, this may be the case, but depending on your specific situation, but I don't know how likely it is. And this may be, but I don't know how likely for your situation is that you're going to be sticking this penis in you the first time you see it. Like, I feel like that's a very specific, like, I met somebody off the internet and we have to have sex tonight, you know, yeah, kind of a thing as well. But yeah, I think, like you said, like, basically the end of the day is any kind of sex. If you play, if you can't improvise, you're going to have problems.
All right. So the next question is, what's the best way to avoid jealousy and encourage experimentation and exploration for a partner that's very critical of herself and self-conscious? So
I think we've kind of addressed the jealousy in.
We've addressed jealousy quite a bit. But the encourage the experimentation and exploration. When you're doing that, make sure that you're actually encouraging her experimentation and exploration that she wants to do and not encouraging yours. So focus on what she wants to do. If she has fantasies in regards to threesomes or foursomes or moresomes, find out what those things are and tell her, you know, what it is that, you know, would be great about her to do those things. Like, you know what? You are fantastic at oral sex. I think you giving a blowjob to three people, those three people are going to have a great time. But make sure that when you're encouraging, that you're encouraging what she wants to do, not what your fantasies are. Because that's just going to throw you right back into that jealousy thing. If your partner is very critical of themselves, you know, just making sure that you are telling them, you know, the good things that they are sexually, not just when we're talking about having a threesome, but outside of that, it's about building a relationship outside of that threesome thing, you know, building good communication, not just when you're trying to get in a multiple partner situation. A lot of, you know, self-consciousness, some of that, that's going to have to be her. That's going to have to be work that she does on herself. But as far as what you can do is just reassure your partner that you are happy with them, that you enjoy what they do, that you think that they're great. And make sure that you're doing that, not just when you're trying to get them to do something.
All right. This is actually our last question. I've heard it's only really enjoyable if there's an existing connection between all participants. Is that true? It's from JT. So my answer to this is going to be that it depends a lot on the person. It's interesting that you asked this question. I actually just read a blog post from Lee Harrington, and he's talking about play specifically and about how he really doesn't get anything out of like being out at a party and somebody walking up to him and asking him to tie them up. But that's him personally. Honestly, I will say first that for a lot of reasons, us and most of the people that I know, a lot of their partners are people who they have at least a friendship with. And there's a whole lot of reasons behind that. I think a lot of it is just, it's easier. Like, you already know this person. You already know what they like. You're already hanging out with them. Like, you have other things you can do besides screw around. So you have other reasons you can get together. So a lot of people, including us, the vast majority of the people that we play with, that we sleep with, there is some kind of connection. Now, with that being said, I don't find it unenjoyable to do it if there is no connection.
I think that it's very much a personal thing. Certain people really do require a lot of connection. And also, like, even like for myself, there are certain activities that I feel like I need more of a connection with. Like, I can finger anybody and it's fun. It's fantastic. But certain, like, you know, topping, bottoming situations, like, I don't get a lot out of it if I'm not connected with that person. So I think it's going to vary depending on the person and depending on the activity. That being said, I think the question when you say it's, you know, is it hard to, you know, be enjoyable if there isn't a connection? That connection could just be the connection of, that's a sexual connection. That person looks awesome to bang. Like, as there has to be something, there has to be some sort of draw between the two people. You have to either be physically attracted to them, sexually attracted to them, or emotionally, which is that connection you're talking about. So I think it's more of the factor of making sure that there's some sort of connection. And even if that connection is, I just want to stick it in that person, it's still a connection. There's that desire for a person. I think where it's not enjoyable is when you're in a group, you know, sex situation and you're doing stuff with somebody that you're not physically attracted to, you're not sexually drawn to, you're not connected on a different level. And then that's not enjoyable because you're not doing the activities that you would want to do with somebody that you would enjoy doing them with. So, you know, sometimes that existing connection could just be an existing connection to want to screw them. Like,
all right. So that's actually it for today. I think in the future, you know, if people like this, we go along, we do it. We may probably split it up and do our Q&As separately from our topic so that we can maybe not take quite as big a chunk of time at once. But, you know, growing pains. Main thing is, do us a favor. We're going to be putting this out. Like I said, it's not even going to really be on a podcast. We're probably going to put it out on like YouTube, Facebook video, just to give you guys a chance. If you like this, if you'd like to hear more of this, more of us talking, maybe us interviewing some people, if you feel like this would be a good way for us to kind of talk to you and help you, do us a favor. Shoot us a message. Shoot us an email. Shoot us a comment on Facebook. Let us know, because we're really putting this out there to see if this is a better way for us to help you than, you know, the blogs and some of the other things we've been doing, which will still continue to happen. But we're looking for something to do on a more regular basis to really, I guess, really take kind of a more personal approach to helping you guys. So I guess that's it.
Yep. See you guys soon.
And thank you for joining us.